Welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Eleanor Wagner on. She is the author of Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena, and also Dream a Little Dream. She is the founder of the Lady Ghostbusters team, and Eleanor is also the podcast host of Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World, Stories of Ghosts and Other Anomalies. I'll be right back with my conversation with Eleanor Wagner right after these brief messages.
Are you looking for a new book to read? Check out my newest book, An Awakening, by Wendy M. Cope, last name spelled K-O-K. Basically, it's a story of good versus evil, and these things slowly start taking over the residents of this small northern town of Neillsville, Wisconsin, and I would love it if you would read it. My books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Book Baby Bookshop, everywhere really, and you can find me at WendyMCopeAuthor.com.
Today I have Eleanor Wagner. She is the author of Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena. You know what? I'm going to start that over.
More than a mouthful, that's for sure.
That's why I record. I don't do the live. All right.
Thanks for giving me a laugh of the night.
Eleanor Wagner is the author of Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena. Dream a Little Dream. She's a paranormal investigator, the founder of the Lady Ghostbusters team, and the podcast host of Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World, Stories of Ghosts and Other Anomalies. Whew, I got through that. Welcome, Eleanor.
Thank you so much for having me. You did good. You did good.
sometimes I get tongue-tied over these phenomena,
Yeah, phenomena.
Yeah.
I'm so used to it by now, so it's second nature for me. Well, don't forget I have the Sussex County Hauntings books that came before the Warren County Hauntings and added the other strange phenomena into that part of the title, so it's stuck, so it's gone for the entire series that way.
Okay, so it's like, is the Warren County Hauntings book two, or is it a different
actually,
book?
Actually, no, it's actually book three in the series. It's my very first book was Dream a Little Dream, and it's a supernatural paranormal romance that takes place in Sussex County, where I live now. I got distracted and started to write this book about local hauntings because I'm sensitive. I've had experiences. I had a haunted shop that I owned in Sussex. And I said, well, let me see if the people in the area would like to share their stories. And so that's how book one of Sussex County Hauntings was started. I thought it was only going to be one book. And then by the time I finished book one, I had a whole bunch of stories left over for a whole other book. So I said, okay, I'm going to write book two. And then I started accumulating file folders because people who were reaching out to me with their stories were coming from counties that I wasn't even writing about. So I had probably five or six separate folders for different counties. And so that's where the Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena came from, because it was the next biggest folder that I had. And I released that this past Halloween. And so now I'm currently working on Sussex County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena Part 3. It was only supposed to be Sussex County Hauntings or Warren County Hauntings or Pike County Hauntings. And then I just added the other strange phenomena category when I wrote the first book, because not only were people reaching out to me with stories about ghosts, they were reaching out to me with stories about Bigfoot in Sussex County and UFO sightings. And so those don't necessarily fit into the category of ghosts and hauntings. So I said, you know what, I'm going to put other strange phenomena in so I could put those chapters in there. And it was really a great call because the Bigfoot chapter is probably one of the biggest chapters in the whole book. And then when I was writing Sussex 2, the other strange phenomena category opened up a whole world of opportunity for me. So I chose for that particular book to write about people's visits with their deceased loved ones. You know, when people have their deceased loved ones come back to pay them visits. And also when people are with their loved ones at their time of death. that's a very poignant experience for people when they, when they're with a loved one, when they pass. And a lot of them have some very, very interesting stories. So I put in those chapters. And then when I came out with Warren County Hauntings, I used near-death experience stories from people to be put into those chapters. So it worked out rather nicely.
Now, are these based off of true stories?
They are. They are. They're all true account stories from people around the county. And I do get, you know, people just sending me stories about bumps in the night and footsteps that they hear. And I'm not going to necessarily write about those. The stories that I've selected to put in the book are the really more interesting tales that people will either get a good scare from or a really heartfelt reaction from, that sort of thing.
Where is Sussex County?
It's in northern part of New Jersey.
Okay. Warren County is there also?
High Point State Mountain is part of Sussex County. Warren County is the next county over. So it connects two, but they run through each other, kind of.
Before all of this, before your books, what led you into the paranormal to begin with?
I've been sensitive my whole life. I lived with a ghost in my own house growing up in the Bronx. So I always knew that I had a sensitivity to spirit, and ultimately started writing about it when I was writing these books. And that's how the Lady Ghostbuster team was formed, because I was writing the first Sussex Hauntings book in 2019 when I was given the opportunity to have an investigation in the Sterling Hill Mining Museum in Ogdensburg, New Jersey. It's a non-functioning mine today, but for years it was a functioning mine. And of course, with that went hundreds upon hundreds of deaths, undocumented and documented, when they started doing that. And so to be given the chance to go in there and do an investigation with the paranormal team was like, oh, a godsend. Oh, yes, I want to do it. And then I was like, well, I don't have a paranormal team, so I've got to assemble one. Yeah, I scrambled to put one together.
So, you know, growing up, you know, you said your calling was for this, really. I mean, and you had a personal experience with the ghost. Was it in the house?
It was.
In one certain house, or did it follow you?
No, it wasn't a follower. No. And, you know, certain people that have ghosts that follow them, really, it's considered an attachment. And to me, when ghost follows somebody, it oftentimes can be that the person is haunted. So it's not necessarily considered, how do I word this? So, well, if somebody's haunted, that ghost can attach to them and follow them. I've never had that before. I just had this ghost that lived in the house that I was growing up in, and it only stayed on the main floor of the house. So when I moved into the basement, I didn't see him anymore. But for years and years and years, I did. And as a young child, I was so afraid of it, because I didn't know that all he was trying to do was get my attention, because he knew I could see him. See, now if I could go back to that house again, I would have a whole different experience with it, because now I'm not afraid to connect.
How old were you?
Oh, I was young. It started from when if I remember, as far back as like 5 years old, that I started to see him, and then ended when I was 10 and moved down into the basement. So 5 years.
Was it friendly or mean?
Definitely not mean-spirited. Didn't communicate in any way, shape, or form, other than that he would just walk from the corner of the living room into my bedroom and stop at the edge of my bed and just stand there and watch me. And of course, like I said, I was a young kid. I was terrified. I didn't know that he was only trying to get my attention because he knew I could see him. Actually grabbed me at one point when I tried to run out of the room, because sometimes I would get so afraid, even underneath my covers, I would scramble from my bed to try and run past him to go into my parents' room. And I think one time he just was going to work at it much harder to get my attention, and unintentionally scared the bejesus out of me. So, but like I said, it wasn't until I was 10, when my sister got married and moved out of the house, that I was able to take one of the rooms downstairs in the basement and never saw him again, because at that point I was living in pitch darkness. The basement was pitch black, and it was like, oh, this is heaven. I don't have to look at a lighted hallway and see him walking into my room anymore.
Mm-hmm. I have done it, you know, being a mother, a wife, a podcast host, a paranormal team, an author. You probably need to like one extra day in a week to get everything done.
Oh my goodness.
You know, writing. I mean, where do you find the time to fit that in?
It's really funny that you should say that, because that very first book, Dream a Little Dream, I wrote that in the 90s before I had my children. I wrote that book, put it in a box, packed it away, and then became mom. And I was Girl Scout mom. I was 4-H mom. I was women's group mom. You know, I was all of those other things and never really did the writing thing like I had so fervently before until they were full grown and social media took on this big explosion and reconnected with high school friends. And one of them had said to me, he had gotten his book published. And I was both excited for him at the same time as I was envious because I knew I had written a book that I thought was pretty darn good and packed it away and did nothing with it. And so he had said, pull that thing out of the closet and let's send it into my publisher. And that's what reignited for me the drive to start writing again, because now my kids are full grown and I've got a little bit more time on my hands than I would have before.
Right.
And now I can really devote myself to a career that I normally wouldn't have been able to do before. With that, everything just started to take off. I never expected it to be as vast as it has become. I thought it was just going to be, you know, me writing and having fun doing that. Not to say that my family doesn't feel neglected at times. I mean, I get it from my husband and my daughter that still lives at home. I mean, she's 22, but she's still like, hey, mom, I want to just spend time with you. I just want to watch a movie. I want to just hang. And all I want to do is sit by my computer and write. And now that I've got all of these podcasting interviews that I'm holding or who are interviewing me, or I've got presentations I've got to go to out at the library or at the college, and all of these things that I've got to fill, including paranormal investigations, and still find time to write that book, it's becoming all consuming. It really is really difficult, but I'm trying to manage my time appropriately so that I can get it all done.
I was looking on your YouTube page. You did a video for like inspiring writers. You know, you had you and your friend was doing a either traditional or self-publishing. I thought that was really interesting.
Yes.
You know, because myself, I'm not there yet. I'm not putting the cart before the horse, but I'm looking at that, you know, both avenues, because not everybody's going to be traditional published. I mean, you have to be accepted, you know, naturally, and your book has to be good enough. I thought that was really interesting. I like that. I like the way it was kind of a sit down, you know, going back and forth, you know, what's the pros and cons for each one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how you wrote your books and how she wrote hers, you know, or published it.
Well, thank you for that. What I can tell you that is that a lot has changed since that video was created, although it is still very informative to somebody like yourself who is looking to see and listen to both sides. I could probably have a part two and explain what could happen if you were with a regular mainstream publisher, because not all of them are those big, big, huge publishers that mm-hmm. do all of these things for the author. Some of them are just small houses, which that one was, but it was still a legitimate publisher. And for the first year that I was with them, for all intents and purposes, it was great. I couldn't complain. I mean, I was doing a lot of marketing and I wasn't seeing anything really much from it. I mean, I was getting a check here and there, but it still, to me, didn't seem to be in sync with everything that I was doing as far as the marketing was concerned. And so at one point, and I would never have known about this if a fan hadn't reached out to me via email. She contacted me. She said, Miss Wagner, you know, I read your Hauntings books and I really enjoyed them. And now I would love to get the Dream and Little Dream book. But every time I go on Amazon, they tell me it's out of stock. And she said, I've tried several times and I can't get a hold of it. So I said, well, I have some in stock at home. I have inventory, so I'd be happy to take your order, but thank you for letting me know. So I contact Amazon and Amazon tells me your publisher hasn't been replenishing our supply. So I'm like, what? So now I'm thinking, how many people were trying to get this book from all of this marketing that I've done and haven't been able to because it's out of stock? So now I try to reach the publisher, which can be a daunting task if they don't have a regular telephone number. If it's a small publisher, a lot of them have full-time jobs and they're doing this on the side, which was the case with this particular publishing firm. But I tried all the avenues that I'd used before to get in touch with them and had always been able to reach them. And now all of a sudden I'm not able to reach them. Either they're ignoring me or they're just not getting my messages. And I'm starting to get really aggravated. So I take it upon myself to go on the website and reach out to every single author that was on that publishing firm's website and contacted them. And I said, this is what's going on with me. Have you had any issues with them? And every single one of them came back with an issue, but one.
Wow.
Something's not right here. So now I have to take the bull by the horn and I've got to take drastic measures And I don't even know how I was able to get in touch with somebody from there. And I said, look, I've been trying to reach you and nobody's been responding to me. And now I've contacted my lawyer. I want the rights to my books back. And so she, I guess, knew who to get in touch with and put me in contact with the person. And I ended up getting the rights to my books back. And I republished Dream a Little Dream as an independent publisher. The children's book, which is not out yet, but I have a children's book series that's actually what I went to school for, writing for children. I have this children's book series that they held onto for several years that they didn't do anything with. So now that's mine again. And it's with the illustrator now. So I'm hoping that will be completed by this Christmas. So when I went to the Sussex County Hauntings books, I was going to publish them by myself independently. Mm-hmm. And I've had a really good experience doing that. Everything is in my control. I can do it however I want. And all that marketing that I did before is now paying off because I'm doing it for myself. There's not that intermediary person. It's a lot of work.
Right. I guess that would be the dangers of going traditional would be making sure you have a legitimate publisher. Mm-hmm. There's a lot out there now, and there's millions of writers out there trying to put their book out, but and you're competing with so many people. But like these variety presses out there, that I know of a lot of stories where people have been taken, mm-hmm. putting money in and not getting out.
Well, that's the one thing I was told in school. The one thing that stuck with me was when you're an author and you're submitting to a publisher, the one thing is you should not have to lay out a dime of your own money for any publisher, small publishing firm or big. You don't lay out a dime. So that was the one thing when they originally sent me the contract for that book, Dream a Little Dream. If they were going to ask me for money, I would have said, bye, no, thank you. But it didn't cost me anything. I didn't have to lay out anything. So they really, like I said, the experience was great. I mean, they had an editor, my book went to the editor and we worked together. And so for all intents and purposes, they started out good. And I don't know what went wrong or how it went awry, but it did. And so I decided to just break my ties with them. But you do have to watch. And like I said, the one thing you can remember is you shouldn't have to dish out a dime of your own money.
I listened to your episode of the 1966 UFO over
Wanacue.
I enjoyed that one. I like that one, because you have firsthand people that were there that witnessed some of the stuff that goes on. I enjoyed that one. I liked that one a lot.
It was really cool, especially since he had corresponded with Professor Hynek, which is mm-hmm. well known in the Project Blue Book series. So when I've heard about that before, and to hear Nick Frasche say that, he was corresponding with the man, it was really cool, because now you're hearing about Professor Hynek and his separate journal of the reality of what he was doing as opposed to what they told him he had to do.
So I look at these timelines of a lot of these UFO sightings, the facts that the people present. In 1966, 1969, it seemed like that was busy years for UFO encounters. So on Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World, does that relate to all paranormal activity, UFOs, Bigfoot?
Exactly. We can have a little bit of everything, even conspiracy theorists and cryptids and all of that stuff. Yeah. So that it can touch upon whatever you might find strange or scary.
Stories of ghosts and other anomalies. I'm thinking, well, other anomalies have to be like the unexplained. And that's what paranormal is.
Yes.
From Bigfoot to Fae to everything, anything paranormal. Mm-hmm. Your story growing up, my story growing up are similar with a ghost in the house.
Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Everybody has a similar story.
And everybody likes a good ghost story. It doesn't have to be just in Ohio has to listen to ghost stories in Ohio or in Sussex County have to listen to. To me, it's about the landscape of life and the endurance of the souls that live there. So when I write my books, I like to talk about the history of the town a little bit. And if I have a little history about the location, let's say if it takes place in an 1800s building, I like to tell people a little about that history if I can. And then I like to tell them about the personal account of the residents in that building that they've shared with me, which brought us together. And then if I have a chance to bring in my paranormal team to do an investigation, then I can share whatever it is that we unearth on our investigation as well. And like I said, it doesn't really matter where you live. Everybody likes to hear a good ghost story.
And especially a true ghost story. But that leads me to, you were talking about your paranormal team. the Lady Ghostbusters. I mean, you formed a team. What does your team do?
Okay. Well, the team, I should start with telling you that story that I began a little earlier about the mine and how we were invited. I was invited to bring my paranormal team into this mine to do an investigation, but I didn't have a paranormal team. I was saying yes to the president of this mine. Oh, yeah, great. Thank you so much. I'm going, shit, I don't have a team. Now I got to get a team together. So what I did is I would always go on these weekends away with friends of mine to go do some investigations in local places that were known to be haunted. And so in our travels at one point locally, we met a paranormal team that I had kept in touch with on Facebook. And so I reached out to a few of them and said, would you like to come? And then I was already heavily into interviewing people for that first book. And at the time I had really connected with these five women who were very intuitive. They were gifted. They did experience things their entire lives. Some of them were psychic. Some of them were just sensitives. They could see, smell, hear, that kind of thing, spirit. So I said, you know what? I know that they really don't know me, but we had lengthy conversations about their stories that I was writing about. Let me ask them if they want to join me on this adventure. And I planned it specifically for my birthday weekend. This was my birthday present to myself to go in the mines. And we ended up staying in there for 6 hours. But I can tell you that in a little bit. I invite these five women to come on this adventure. And out of the five, three of them accepted. And those three women are still with me today. So that initial group that came to that Sterling Hill Mines Museum investigation is still with me today, the core group. Since then, we have 20 members. Some of them are men who don't care that they're paranormal investigators with the Lady Ghostbusters team.
I looked at your webpage. I'm like, well, there's men on here. There's men on this team.
Yes, there are. Yeah. Yep. They don't mind being paranormal investigators with the Lady Ghostbuster team. So, which works out very nicely because we love these select men that we have in our group as well. It's just grown, but we have investigations and I kind of put it out there. If I have a large space, I can have a larger group come along. If it's a smaller space, I have to keep it small. But before COVID, we were doing an investigation every weekend and then COVID hit. So it kind of shut everything down and things are starting to pick up again.
So how many, you said you have 20 on your team, 20 members?
Yes.
And I imagine they all have, I mean, a love for the paranormal naturally. But the gifts, they have specially gifted, like psychic mediums, each have a certain gift, you know, can provide to the team.
Absolutely. And I try and assemble people with gifts because it's very helpful, especially if there are residents and businesses reaching out to us to say, could you come and tell us what's going on? But I don't outrule people either. I have three or four people on the team who are not sensitive or gifted in that respect, but they love to video, they love the history and contribute in other ways that are very, very helpful. And believe it or not, one of them who was pretty introverted and didn't think she had any gifts at all has now since really blossomed and found that she really is gifted and didn't really know for certain. So when you're around that energy with these people all the time, stuff that you didn't even know was there just starts to surface.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Eleanor Wagner right after these brief messages.
Hello, and welcome to Chit and Chat, a podcast for encouraging others. Who needs encouraging? Everyone needs some encouragement. I reach out to musicians, nonprofits, comedians, whoever I can find to come on here and share encouragement to you. Why? Why not? We live in a negative world, negative news, negative social media half the time. This podcast is about encouraging others, encouraging one another. So why not share encouragement to our friends, family, coworker? You know what? Encouragement is contagious. Let's spread it to one and all, to all parts of the world. This is Chit and Chat.
I imagine that you guys check each other like at the door, you know, so you can play off each other, use each other's investigation.
Oh, absolutely. Tactics. That energy is amazing when you're all together. And there are specific team members as well that really really click. They feed off of each other's energy and can finish each other's sentence. Like, for example, there's Laurel Devine and Art Peterson. They are two people that met for the very first time at that mining investigation. They'd never known each other before, but they met that night and they clicked so well that we got a whole story from a spirit through the two of them. And to this day, when they come together for an investigation, it's just amazing to have the two of them work together. In fact, I don't know if I mentioned, but the footage that we got from that mining investigation, we had so much happen that night. We were in there for 6 hours, didn't feel like it was 6 hours, but we had so much happen that night. We all had our cameras rolling and we all had audio and we had different angles for this misty fog that actually was intelligent and communicated with us. And I selected the best footage from that event and sent it into Paranormal Court on Camera. And they liked it so much, they featured us on an episode.
Then how far out do you travel, I mean, to do an investigation?
We've gone, I'd say, a little over an hour or so. It's not that we weren't, it's not that we would object to going further. We just have never done so because I've been writing about the counties surrounding where I am. And so the people that have been reaching out to us obviously know I'm writing about Sussex County or Warren County and or Morris County or Passaic County. These are all the counties that surround this area. And because they know that, these are the people that are reaching out to me. So it's not like I've gotten anybody from, say, Arkansas, say, hey, can you come over here? We have an investigation. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say, no, we wouldn't do that. But we've just gotten our fill with stuff going on right here. So it doesn't really mean that we have to travel very far.
So you do residential and business?
Yes. Yes. A lot of the times people will send me some sort of footage, maybe from their security cameras or what have you, and say, I think it's paranormal. What do you think? And so I'll look at it and I'll pass it along to some of the other members and get their feedback on what they think. And that's how we decide whether it warrants an investigation or not. And then we decide if we're going to go in and see for ourselves.
What about cemeteries?
Cemeteries are great. They're great.
I'm afraid to ask that question because sometimes I get people that do not want to touch a cemetery.
Oh, no, they're great. Yeah. Oh, no. I find them very peaceful. Mm-hmm. There's nothing scary, in my opinion, in the cemetery. In fact, the very first investigation that we went on was at the Deckertown Cemetery, and it was a very cool, moonlit October night. It was perfect for this cemetery tour. And we were just randomly taking pictures. We were told, you know, take them in succession. So we would take maybe three of the same spot, because if something was to appear, it wouldn't appear in, say, the first frame, but come in the second frame and maybe not the third frame. And you'd probably end up with about 150 pictures maybe by the time the end of the night, and go home and you'd be going through all these pictures to see if you come up with anything. And I got a great, great picture of a spirit in two frames. And I got five great shots that night, but two of the same spirit in two frames, and put it in book one. I posted that in book one because I was so excited about it.
Has anybody been hurt during an investigation on your team? Scratched, pushed?
Yeah. Yeah. That story is actually going to be coming out in Sussex County Hauntings 3. Mm-hmm. I wrote about the location in Sussex County Hauntings book 1, but when I was writing that particular chapter, my friend at the time had a shop in the building and then moved it out. So I never got my investigative team in there, never had the opportunity. And after I had written the book already, a new store owner contacted me and said, I know you wrote about this in your first book, but I'm in there now and we have a lot of activity. So I was like, wow, can we come in? And she said, yeah. So we went and did an investigation, and we actually have been back there, I want to say, three or four times. And the third time that the team went back there, it was right after the business owner located a hidden staircase that was not visible from the attic or from obviously the wall that she found it behind. And we knew that that's why she was suddenly having all this major activity, because there was something very, very suspicious about this hidden stairway. And it ended up being not good. I mean, because you know, when everybody hears about history, they're all like, oh, I love history. But sometimes history is not good, and it does have, it is wrought with prostitution and murder and human trafficking and all of that stuff that a lot of people don't know about. And in this particular instance, the spirits in the building were two brothers, and the one brother was a sea captain who had died at sea, who for all intents and purposes was the good spirit throughout all the visits while we were there and appearances to people over the years. But when that stairwell was accessed and unearthed, the mean brother, the one who was doing the child trafficking, actually is what he was doing, he had them locked up in this little room in the attic, and we unearthed the scratchings of their names on the wall. It was really a very, very sad thing. But yes, in answer to your question, one of the women who was channeling the bad brother was scratched and bruised from that incident.
Yeah, because sometimes people get confused between an evil spirit, a bad spirit, and a demon. In my personal experience over the past 40 years, I've only come across demons twice. And I didn't handle either one of those because I'm not qualified. But I had other guests come on and say, you know, you have a bad spirit, an ornery spirit. I had somebody say, you know, if you're an asshole in life, you're going to be an asshole in death.
I was just going to say that. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Have you ever went to a funeral and the guy's there, and you hate to say it, but, oh, he was such a great guy. No, he wasn't, you know? And sometimes I think that when you do an investigation, sometimes you get pushed. That doesn't mean it's a demon.
Right. It's just somebody who was mean, doesn't want you there, and is going to put, yeah, I know exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. It is so true.
Have you ever come across a demon?
No, and I'm not equipped to either. And Laurel Devine, who's probably, her and Art Peterson, who are the most experienced from our team, they would probably be able to handle it. But that's not something that I'm equipped to do, nor have any desire to. So, but we have had mean spirits before.
I love the fact when you said, you know, about the history, because I do think, you know, history does play a part in a lot of your investigations on what you're investigating and who you're investigating.
I agree.
Now, do you believe you can move a spirit on?
Oh, absolutely. And I personally like to give them the opportunity to do that. I like to say to them, because we've had instances, for example, we had one instance where there was a spirit of a man who had, he was a gay Catholic. Mm-hmm. And so he had taken his life, and he not only was tormented by the Catholic guilt, he was also afraid that he was going to be judged on the other side. He was actually taking care of a little boy ghost who was an epileptic in life. And just think about being an epileptic in like the 1800s. Mm-hmm. You were considered cursed and outcasted, and you were locked away from society. And so it's amazing that these two spirits came together in death. The elder was trying to protect the younger one, and neither of them wanted to go into the light for fear of being unaccepted. And so we took that opportunity to pray for them and tell them that in the light there is love, there is no judgment, and it's okay for you to go there. And they ultimately ended up going, which I was really glad about. If a spirit wants to stay, they have a reason for staying. I just wish they would all know that if you go to the light and you go to the other side, you can come back anytime you want to. But if you don't go, you're stuck here in this place.
Right. My personal belief is there is a heaven and there is a hell, and there is spirits. There is an afterlife. And you can, I agree with you, give them the choice if they want to move on or stay where they're at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I agree that, you know, there is definitely a heaven and a hell, and I don't care what anybody says. I mean, I have a Deb Zielinski. She is one of my team members as well. And she's a nurse, and nurses mm-hmm. see a lot of shit. Oh, yeah. And I wrote about her story in book one, where she is working in an assisted living facility, and she sees, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before a resident dies, who comes to prepare them to go, because she's a very sensitive medium. And so she's able to see these spirits, and she has seen both heaven and she has seen both hell. Yeah, hell is pretty scary.
Your thoughts on the Pentagon UFO release last year?
I'm so excited that it was released. Are you talking about when President Trump released all the information about UFOs? Is that what you're talking about?
Just released last year with 23 incidences. And actually only one was solved, saying it was a weather balloon. I'm excited that the report was released. I wasn't surprised in what was in it.
Sure that there's a lot more that they haven't talked to us about, haven't told us about. And I'm sure that I know that you can go onto the sites yourself and see a lot of stuff that's been released that the public doesn't even know about. Because I have friends that do that all the time. I'm like, oh yeah, look what they've released and nobody knows about it. I'm like, wow, that's pretty crazy. Have you yourself ever had a UFO experience?
Never, no. But I live in Trumbull County. 1994, there was a big incident. I'm not sure. Matter of fact, it was put on Art Bell's Coast to Coast Radio back then and made our county famous for these UFOs. Well, it just so happens two of my friends, really good friends of mine, are on two different police departments that chase these things from Ohio to PA.
Ooh.
And we can look it up on YouTube or Google it, UFOs over Trumbull County. That opened my eyes at that time, because I had a friend, a coworker that came to work that same night that was talking about there was a UFO over his car. And we all was like, okay, Bob, what were you drinking? I mean, that's how our mentality was. And that's how if you listen to the 911 tapes from that episode, and I have the 3-part or 4-part series on my podcast on that incident from the dispatcher and the police officers going back and forth, and the TV crew and the newspaper crew, everybody was there. And yet they're told the next day it's a weather balloon by the State Department. I mean, yeah, I mean, I have not seen one. That's not saying I don't believe in them.
Sure. Well, when we moved to Sussex County, actually, when we moved to Wantage, where we are right now, it was very desolate at the time. It was a very new development. We were the only second house in the development. And so there was a lot of coyote, a lot of wildlife, pitch black, nothing around for a ways. And we had our house, we had a pool in the backyard, and it was night swimming time. And my kids were outside in the back with a friend swimming in the pool, night swimming. And I was just inside the house doing whatever I was doing. They come running in from outside. Mom, 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 we have a UFO. Come out here. There's a UFO. And I'm thinking, what? So by the time I get out of there, obviously there's nothing there. It's gone. I had the good sense at the time to say, okay, I'm going to do something with your kids right now, because I want to see if you all say you saw the same thing. I want you to show me that you saw the same thing. So I had them separated in different areas of my house. I mean, I really did this methodically, put them in 3 separate areas, gave them papers and pencils and utensils to create a picture of what it was that they saw, because I wanted to see if they drew the same thing. And each kid drew exactly the same thing. And I still have the pictures. I put them in book 1 because it was like, okay, they said they saw this and it looks exactly the same in every picture.
Everybody's calling in, and even the dispatcher saying, what's in the water tonight? I mean, what's people drinking? Swamp water? Have that many calls coming in on the same thing. And then you have law enforcement telling you it's over their car.
Right. Nick Frasche, he and his partner they were afraid. They were up for promotions. Neither of them wanted to talk openly about it because they didn't want to be called crazy and exactly. Not get their promotions. So they talked amongst each other about it so that they could fathom that this actually happened, and they had each other to confirm it for the other. But they didn't talk about it until after they were retired and they could say, fridge you, I'm going to talk about it because now you can't do anything to me about it.
Back then, unless you had Art Bell on a midnight every night, you really didn't get these stories. It was hard to find a show based on the paranormal, on ghosts, on spirits, on UFOs, Bigfoot. I think it's more accessible now with social media.
Oh, yeah. And I do feel that they try and shut you down like they did the gentleman from the Pulse Cowers. And it's a choice they make whether they're going to come out about it or not. I think it's very brave that they do. It's just sad that people get shut down like that. And I think now more people are speaking openly about it, like you said, on social media. So it's getting around a lot easier and quicker.
And I forgot to ask you when I was talking about your paranormal team, the lady Ghostbusters, what type of equipment do you like to use?
We are more traditionalist than anything. We rely mostly on our senses and what we can see, feel, and hear. Although we do use your typical K2s to see about the energy, we'll use dowsing rods and pendants so that they can communicate with yes and no responses. We are really big on audio because that is just undeniable proof. When you get a voice coming in a conversation, it's just a like, wow, kind of moment. You know, that you'll be there talking and all of a sudden you'll hear a response, not in real time because you're standing there chit-chatting until you listen back to that audio, it's there. I mean, I know in this day and age, people can manipulate video footage, which makes you question whether something's real or not. I mean, if I'm there and I've watched it and I saw it happen in real time, I know it's real. I know it's legitimate. I know we didn't mess with the video. But the public, if you're going to share it with them, are going to say, ah, I don't believe that. They did something to it. So it's kind of iffy. But an audio is a lot harder, I think, to do something about.
Usually sometimes your non-believers are not going to believe no matter what. You've got the audio and the video. And to me, it takes me back when I did my documentary. I had the equipment. I had my team. I had my actors. I was making this documentary and nothing. Nothing happened on this bridge.
Yeah, you can't make it happen.
It wasn't until after my crew left the bridge, down this little hollow in Pennsylvania by myself.
Oh, don't tell me.
And that's when I get confronted. I mean, it's hard to tell somebody that, you know, because you're labeled crazy. Or,
yeah. And they're like, yeah, you were there that whole time and nothing happened. And you're going to tell me something happened. Yeah.
Right. If somebody's behind you and pushes you, like with their fist in your back, you know you were pushed. I mean, it's not a muscle spasm, you know, or your ears flicked or you're breathed on it, you hear a growl. I mean, all that. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, you couldn't do this when the people and the cameras were here.
And you know what? I don't feel like I got to convince anybody. I don't really care if anybody believes me or not. I know what I do and what happens to me, and I don't got to convince anybody of it. You don't want to believe me? Okay, then don't believe me. I really don't care. You know, I know what I see and felt and heard. And if you want to hear the story, I'll be happy to tell you about it. But I'm not interested in whether you believe it or not.
And that's like me with my book, you know, 55 years ago. Why did it take me so long to write it? Well, you know, I mean, I figured now it's time to get the story out, you know, and it did happen. And there's a few people left that it happened to in this house, finally getting something out that I wanted to put out a long time ago.
Exactly. There's a time and a reason for everything. There's no coincidence. I definitely feel like even me starting my own life and my own career at 50 was meant to happen. I mean, I've been sensitive my entire life, but I had an incident that happened when I was 12 that shut it down entirely. And it wasn't until the death of my father that it was reignited, reawakened. And it was like, wow, this was so real. And then from that point on, I was like, okay, I'm here, I'm ready, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it just kept getting better and better. And it wasn't until that moment when I was 50, when everything started to turn around for me. And now, because I'm doing it so often, I'm just getting better and better and better. Mm-hmm. There's no coincidence. There's got to be a reason why it's happening.
Well, I don't believe in coincidences. Everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely.
So what do you have planned for 2022?
Oh boy. For 2022, getting back into all the investigations, full fledged, because COVID's gone away and people are unmasking and it's like, yay, we can get back to normal life again. So I plan on all of those investigations that we were supposed to have, reconnecting with those groups and saying, we're ready. Will you let us in? And I've been really doing a lot of work with historical societies because I've already told you I love history and I think it's really important for us to preserve history. And so if I'm able to help that in some way, that's a goal of mine, helping to get these ghosts acknowledged, get their stories told, get people answers that live with them, get them to live together in peace and harmony if the spirits want to stay. That's all part of the goal, and to continue writing and continue podcasting and getting other people's stories out. That's my goal.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with your Lady Ghostbusters, your writing, and your podcast.
Thank you. I'm learning as I go. It was all very new to me. It was a spur of the moment decision to see if I could go for it and do it. And I listened to some of the background and go, what was I thinking? I should have done a lot better. But, you know, you got to learn and go with the flow and try and get better as you go along.
Well, thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And please let me know when your book comes out. I would love to read it.
I want to thank Eleanor Wagner for coming on the show. And please go to the links below and check out Sussex County Hauntings, Book 1, Warren County Hauntings, and also Dream a Little Dream. Also, please check out Eleanor Wagner's The Lady Ghostbusters podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll see you in 2 weeks on another great episode of Ghosts in the Valley podcast. We'll be right back.